Hello, friends. Greg Kokel here with you, live and lively, and back in the saddle again this week. I was gone for a couple of weeks in northern Wisconsin with my brother Dave, just the two of us, fishing fanatics there for a bit. I'll tell you more about that in a moment. Things don't always turn out the way you expect them. Circumstances like that. But just a, you know, hat tip to my good buddies, Sean McDowell and Jay Warner Wallace, who sat in for me the last couple of weeks. I told you I would leave you in good hands, and I did. And I hope you enjoyed them. They're fabulous guys. And those are guys like what you see is what you get. I mean, what I see of these gentlemen in a public circumstance, the persona they portray and the way they come across is the same as I know them in all kinds of private conversations and hanging out and flying around and doing things together. So I was just really happy that they stepped in for me. I think Jim's going to be back, that's right, in a couple of weeks, because I'll be taking my family back to Wisconsin for a few weeks. So he'll be back. And John Noyes is going to be filling in, a veteran of talk radio, or being part of the apologetics.com show here in Southern California. It's a little different because it's like really late at night, like 1 in the morning or so, live radio in the California market. But there is, I've done that show before. It's been a while, but I've done it a number of times. And there is an entire civilization that is awake, alive and awake in the middle of the night. I mean, they're night owls, they're night birds, they're flip-flopped folk, because they sleep during the day and they live their lives during the evening, during the nighttime. It's either their style or their work requires it. But anyway, there's a lot of people up in the middle of the night when many of the rest of us are sleeping. Anyway, John's going to be on board coming up in a few weeks as well. I'll be here this week and next week, and then the rest of the month of June, those dear people and very capable folk will be filling in for me. So, just a couple of thoughts here before I forget. I just want to remind you that our full schedule for reality is in place here for this year. And I think, are we already taking registrations for Southern California? I'm not sure. I think so. And so since we got hurt last year, we didn't have our Southern California, Orange County, Calvary Chapel, Costa Mesa location reality last year. The year before, we had like 2,700 people. This year, we're on board for September 24th and 25th in SoCal. We'll also be in the Seattle area October 15th and 16th. We will be in Minneapolis, St. Paul, November 12th and 13th. We will be in Dallas in the spring, make that February 25th and 26th of 2022. And we'll be in Augusta, Georgia, on April 22nd and 23rd. So we pretty much have a full complement. We have our 5 national locations, our regionals, and we're still looking for an appropriate home for our New England or Northeast regional Seattle. That will be it. We will have boxed the compass then, and we will continue with those important events. But that all coming up. This is chaos to... I wrote it down somewhere. Chaos to clarity, is that right? I got it right. Chaos. I have to wait. I'm going to write that down right here. Chaos, from chaos to clarity. Things seem a lot of chaotic to you. To clarity. There it is. I won't forget it again. Things have been chaotic, crazy chaotic, and we'll have more to say about that. Maybe today, as the whole culture is changing rapidly and not in a good direction, in my view, particularly when I consider deep, profound issues of moral and spiritual truth. But that creates a challenge for us, especially our young people, to whom we want to pass the baton in our reality conferences. And so we will be doing that with a whole lineup of different speakers. And I don't have the lineup in front of me. I'll give you more details in the future. Of course, we've got our STR team with me and Alan and John. And hopefully we can pry Tim out of Canada, where he has been under house arrest, essentially, for about over a year. Hopefully we'll be able to get him out for those events. Jay Warner Wallace, of course, will be there. And then we have a whole bunch of other people that are just going to be exceptional. We always field fabulous communicators because we want to pass that baton effectively to middle schoolers and high schoolers. We don't dumb things down. We don't put it all at the bottom shelf. It can't go on the bottom shelf, much of it. It's rich, good, solid stuff that if they're willing to reach, and these young people are willing to reach, we've seen it happen. They flood into that auditorium and they go right to the front seats. They're willing to reach. Then we have the kind of people that can communicate effectively to them and help them and build them up in Christ to enable them to stand for Christ as his ambassadors with courage and with confidence and with clear thinking and with grace. And that's what we're all about, building those kind of ambassadors. So if you want more information about this year's series starting this fall of reality conferences, just go to realityapologetics.com. And you'll get all the skinny for all of the events. And, of course, all the names of the important players will be there as well. Just so you know, I am going to Wisconsin for a few weeks here in June, but I am making a little detour to Midlothian, Texas. That's the DFW area. On June 27th, I'll be at Stonegate Church, and I'll be talking about tactics. So if you're in the greater Dallas area or environs, you want to make the trip, I think that's a Saturday. Not sure. It's the 27th, and I'll be doing kind of a all-day event, basically. Go to stonegate.church to get the information. Also, Alan Schliemann will be at North Coast Church in Vista, California, on June 18th. He's going to be teaching a class on truth and tolerance in a whatever culture, and you can go to northcoastchurch.com. We have taught many times at North Coast Church over the decades, and Alan's going to be there again on June 18th. Just let you know, that's only two events I'm reporting because we got a pretty wide open schedule. Coming out of last year with all the restrictions on COVID, man, we lost a lot of opportunities to come to local churches and go face-to-face with the people we love, you. And it's not the same doing a Zoom. I'm just telling you, on my side of things or on your side of things. So since things are opening up all over the country, now's a good time to schedule someone from Stand to Reason to come speak at your event or your church, or do a Saturday conference on tactics or whatever it happens to be. Okay, it's very easy to do. Just connect with Darcy, D-A-R-C-Y, at str.org, or you can go to booking at str.org. I'm not wild about the booking characterization. We're not a rock group, but in any event, okay, it works. It's easier to remember. Darcy at str.org or booking at str.org, and we'll take care of you. She'll take care of you and put something together that'll work for all of us, okay? Now, usually when I come back from a trip like I've just been on in northern Wisconsin, I give you a little rundown of some of the cocoa adventures that we experienced. Sometimes it's kind of tame, and other times not so. This was a little bit of a weird 2 weeks for me. It was great being up there with my brother Dave the last couple of years. He's come up during that time and also later in the summer, and he's had his belt on, his carpenter's belt on, and he's been remodeling and building an extension and doing the interior and the floors and hanging doors and putting up drywall and painting and all kinds of stuff. But now we're kind of in a rest phase. We've got the bulk of that done, and we just went up there to enjoy ourselves and relax and be together. And that was fantastic. But you know how it goes when you take a trip like that. In our case, since we have a place up there, things are all squared away. It's not a hotel. It's our place. Been going up there since 1962. And now it's in better shape than ever before. But it always takes a couple of days for things to get squared away. You got to pick up the boat. You got to get the vehicles cleaned up. You know, you got to take one vehicle wasn't even running. I had to get it towed to the dealer to get fixed. But the towboat, or rather the tow vehicle, the Tahoe, that was working all right. And until the last couple of days, which I'll tell you about in a moment. But anyway, so get it all cleaned up. And guess what's happening? The sun is shining. It is beautiful. Everything's great those first few days. And then what happens? You decide to go fishing and everything goes south. And so for like about 10 days, we had really, really unpleasant weather. It was raining. I'm surprised it didn't snow, because it got down, to 20 degrees one night. And so we had the fire stove going all the time, you know, the Vermont castings, pumping it with wood. Makes it nice when it's cozy inside and it's blowing outside, but that's not good fishing weather. Now, the fish could still be biting, but it's kind of hard to navigate the wind and the waves and the rain and all that other stuff. We have good rain gear. But we actually took a canoeing trip once, and I've told you stories about canoeing in this particular area of the Upper Peninsula of Michigan and fishing, and it's good fishing there in Clark Lake and the Sylvania Track. But I started fishing there about 30 years ago in a canoe. Now, 30 years later, we're both in the canoe for about 6 hours. I'm almost ready to turn 71. My brother is 4 years younger than me. He's almost ready to turn 67 in July. And when we finally, after 6 hours of paddling around, or 7 hours, we pulled that canoe up to the launch to get out, neither of us could stand up. We needed a winch. It was like, hey, what's up with these bodies? I used to be able to carry a canoe like this. Now I can't even stand up and get out of the canoe. Now, we were fighting whitecaps on the way back. That might be part of it. But so it was challenging weather-wise. But then we decided to, the day we went up to the UP and we had to drive back. And on our way back, we had a little encounter with a deer. Now, you know, if you're a deer hunter, you know deer can be really smart, or seem to be, because they may be hard to locate in order to find your game and bag your whatever, you know. But on the highway, they're dumb. So we're driving on the highway at about 8:30 at night. It's dark. And this deer, which we're always watching for, comes out of nowhere. And what was odd about this one is it came out from across the road, and it was running in the other lane in the same direction that we were driving. And it was almost as if this deer, this doe, was trying to outrun the truck. If it could just go faster, it could then cut in front of the truck and get a nice clean kill. But it's not going to outrun the truck. It just kept running towards the truck and ran into the side driver door. Now, this was not a pretty scene. We actually went back, and the deer had gotten up and ran into the woods, so I'm just going to believe the best. But it was a dumb move, and it was not a good experience for my 2002 Tahoe that has 309,000 miles on it and running. This has banged up that door pretty well. Okay, so we're going to get that fixed. It still worked, barely, but you could see the deer hair all stuck in the door and little cracks here and there. Right after that happened, we decide we got to get some food before everything closes down. We come into this little community there in northern Wisconsin, and I promise you, a deer starts to cross the road straight ahead of us. I'm slowing down. I'm not going to hit it, partly because I don't want to hit a deer ever. I certainly don't want to hit a deer head on, and I do not want to hit an albino deer. This deer was absolutely pure white. And as it kind of trotted slowly across the road like it owned the world, another one followed it across. I have never seen a white deer in my entire life. I thought I was in Hogwarts or something. And there were two of them in front of me right after that collision I'd had with an ordinary deer. Turns out, in this area, Boulder Junction, Wisconsin, there's a lot of those white deer, and they want to declare it kind of like a special area, the white deer capital of the world. They kind of mate and reproduce and make a lot more white deer. But that was pretty interesting, all right? So another day, my brother took the boat out on another lake. It was kind of bad weather. I was staying home. I had a right solid ground. I always work on my vacation, a little bit here, a little bit there, because things have to get done. I was finishing that up, and then I get a call from him. He says, I'm limping back to the ramp. What happened? Well, I hit a rock. You know, they got submerged rocks. Can't always see them. Took a big chunk out of the hull. Took a piece of this, broke the propeller, you know. So anyway, that's another thing we had to have fixed. So the final day, we're just trying to find some kind of quiet place that we can take the boat, which the propeller had been fixed and whatever. And okay, then we just get in for a few hours, get out, and then kind of call it a trip, right? So we go to this lake that nobody else hardly ever goes to. There's homes on it, but it doesn't have a decent ramp. There is a YMCA ramp at one end of the lake, but that's private. But they had a public ramp, and it's just a sand ramp. So you roll down into the water on the sand, drop the boat, pull out, park the vehicle, get in the boat, do some fishing, which we did, and we caught a couple of fish, two or three or four, something like that. So it was all right for a few hours. Then we go to take the boat out. I drive the car back. Oh, pull the boat up, and I try to pull the boat up on that sand, and I'm not going anywhere. My tires are moving, but I'm not going anywhere. I actually am going somewhere. I'm not going forward. I'm going down. As those tires spin, and I didn't realize I was making a problem, the tires are spinning a hole in the sand, and not only is the axle on the truck down on the sand now, but so is the entire boat trailer laying on the sand. So, you know, for me to get out of the hole is not just like getting out of the hole with a vehicle. I'm pulling a 17-foot fiberglass Basscat with a big 150-horsepower motor on it, and it's laying on the sand, too. This isn't working out. So anyway, Dave backed the boat off. We got that weight out. And then he got in, and he's more clever than me. He's rocking it back and forth. Because sooner or later, if you keep spinning that wheel a little bit, you're grinding the sand away in the front. If you keep rocking back and forth, you're going to get rid of the sand in front and get to the hard pack, which is part of the road that leads down to the sand in the lake. And eventually, he got a grip and popped that whole thing out. Now, it's getting dark. It's almost twilight. We can't get out on that ramp. There's only one other ramp on the lake, and that's the YMCA private ramp at the other ramp at the other end of the lake. So I said, Dave, get in the boat, run down to YMCA. I'll drive around there, and I'll see if I can get permission to pick you up. Well, that he did, but the thing is I had a hard time finding the ramp because it's a goofy roads, and it's in the middle of nowhere and whatever. And so by the time I found the ramp at the other end of the lake, it's dark out. Long and short of it, though, is we finally got that boat loaded. Dave got it on. We strapped it up, pulled it out. Okay, we were done. That was the last day of fishing on our trip. Now, hopefully, I did look at the weather. We left on Sunday, which was also a rainy day. Oh, and Friday and Saturday night, my last night there, we had pulled the boat up into the driveway, and I got out of the car and left the keys not only in the vehicle, but I left them on. Now, I've sometimes done this with the motor still running. So what's up with that? That's old-timer's disease is what it is, creeping in. I don't know if the engine was running or not, but the keys were on. We got up in the morning. Sunday morning, that's the day we're supposed to leave. Battery's absolutely dead. Car's up in the driveway, a boat behind it. Fortunately, we had another vehicle there, and Dave was able to maneuver and get a jump and get it going. But, oh, my goodness, what next? And so we got out of there, left Sunday evening, flew back home. And now I'm back to work for a couple of weeks, and then I get to do this round again. But I did look at the weather, and it was pouring rain when we left, which was a par for the course for the last week and a half, and it was cold. I looked at the weather. Starting Monday, which is yesterday, sunshine, 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 sunshine. You know, you look at that thing in your iPhone, right? All suns all the way down. Maybe a little cloud creeping in, blocking the sun a little bit. Gorgeous day, up to 80 degrees. Until next week, and the day we come in, and there's the little thunderstorm icon. It knew we were coming. So it's going to use up all its sunshine while we're gone, and who knows what it's going to be like when we head out. But that's fishing, friends. That's just the way it sometimes works. All right, well, look at, I've been talking for a long time. Let's just take a break here, and I got some callers on board, but just thought I'd share some personal anecdote, human interest story. We did catch a couple of four-pound smallmouth, just so you know, and if you go to our Facebook, my Facebook, there's a picture of them there, one for each of us. That happened maybe a week and a half ago. We had a good day. Even though it was blowing pretty hard, it wasn't raining, and so we got a couple of four-pounders, and you'll see what those look like. But that's on the Facebook. I hope you check that out, and I'll be back in just a moment with your calls on Stand to Reason.
The world says you can be a boy or a girl. You can be gay or straight. You can be cis or trans. There's no right or wrong way to define yourself. No one can tell you who you are. You decide who you want to be, and whatever that is, it can change whenever you want. That's because your identity is untethered to reality. It's chaos. But you don't have to listen to the world. You can listen to a different account of who you are, one told by your maker. And this one is anchored to reality and will bring you from chaos to clarity. Don't miss this year's Reality Conference. Go to realityapologetics.com to get dates and locations for the Student Apologetics event of the year.
As a high school teacher, I always had a red pen close at hand. When I wasn't in front of my students teaching a lesson, you could find me assessing assignments, grading essays, and evaluating exams. The red pen played a crucial role in the educational development of my students. With it, I questioned their assumptions, exposed their errors, and challenged them to think critically. You see, a good teacher doesn't merely tell his students that they're wrong. A good teacher shows his students why they're wrong so they don't make the same mistakes twice. He corrects because he cares. Last year, I was scrolling through social media, and frankly, I was discouraged at all the bad thinking that undergirded much of what I was reading. Then it hit me. What if someone applied the red pen to this flawed thinking? And Red Pen Logic with Mr. B was born. In the last few months, Red Pen Logic has grown in popularity. Through our engaging and shareable educational graphics and videos, we are helping people, especially young people, assess bad thinking by using good thinking, and we have a lot of fun in the process. So here's your homework assignment. Like the Red Pen Logic Facebook page so you don't miss our next graphic, and subscribe at the Red Pen Logic YouTube channel so you don't miss a single video. Class dismissed.
So the deal is, I don't pay attention to the calendar. That's the difficulty here, you know. And the calendar that I mean is the every year at June 10th, I gain another year. And, you know, as an athlete for a big part of my life, and it's hard to let go of that. You think, you start writing checks, your body can't cash, right? And that's what happened. I'm sitting in the canoe. I can't get out. Oh, man, I got to get to the gym and square that away. Anyway, it was fun, but more things are painful than they used to be. All right. Okay, we got some callers on board, and let's start out with Drew in Oregon. Hello, Drew. Welcome to the show.
Hello, Greg. Thanks for having me.
Sure. You're welcome.
Yeah, I'm calling about the Red Cross. See, I donate blood products there every 2 weeks.
Every two weeks?
Yeah, because they can take platelets every 2 weeks and plasma.
Well, good for you. Yeah.
Well, I didn't call to brag about it. I just called to let you know that they have a transgender issue. They really have You know, they grabbed onto that. When you donate, they ask you what gender you are.
Uh-huh.
But they don't define what gender means.
Right.
What they do is you have six pages, maybe it's eight, pages of stuff you have to read. They don't tell you what they mean. And so
you mean,
for a long time,
wait, there's six pages of stuff about the gender question?
No, about various things. They, you know, all the risks of donating and other things. But
then, sure.
But gender isn't defined in all that. There's plenty of space for it, but they refuse to define it for the donor.
Huh.
So for years, I thought I was answering sex. But no, you're answering gender identity.
Yeah, right. Well, this is clear that no enterprise is able to sidestep this, at least with the kind of political pressure that that people are facing right now on this issue. And I just have to nod to my naivete right now, because what, 6 years ago when the Supreme Court made its decision with Obergefell about the same-sex marriage, I thought it was going to be over with. I thought, okay, you know, this is what they're after. All right, now we're done. Okay, now we can get to ordinary living. But that wasn't satisfactory. And I think there's a much larger enterprise that's in play here that has to do with spiritual dimensions and spiritual warfare and stuff about destroying God's plan for things like human beings and human flourishing and marriage and all of those kinds of things. And so that they would, the culture would that now go after a focus on this infinitesimally small splinter of the population that has this terrible circumstance of struggling with gender dysphoria, and make this out like everybody has this problem. That caught me completely by surprise. But have you read, do you get Solid Ground or our mentoring letters, that stuff in the mail on a regular basis every month?
No, but I read your last one.
The last one that had to do with freedom fading, is that right?
Right.
Yeah,
right.
Okay.
I understand that's part of a series.
Well, for anybody who doesn't get this, also the shorter one page, you know, two sides, one sheet kind of thing, that's the length, about 800 words of a mentoring letter. And the one that went out this morning is about pronouns. And I'm making the case that pronouns matter. And one reason we know they matter is they matter so much to the left in our country that are trying to redefine everything. And they're forcing the issue. This is an indication of something that we have to resist because of the radical distortion it represents of God's created order. Okay, so I'm trying to speak a little bit to that issue, so to equip people. But part of what I had is, I'm not sure, and you can answer this for me, in terms of the Red Cross. On the one hand, I think they're doing great work, and I would never discourage anyone from donating life-giving blood, because the organization has been taken in by this foolishness, because that's unrelated in my mind to the issue of accomplishing the goal that they're accomplishing. They're just swept away in this, it seems to me. You might have a different opinion about that, but that's the way it seems to me.
Well, I thought about that, because I could protest once and just quit giving, protest, and that'd be my protest, and I'm done. But instead, every time I go, I change my gender. You're talking to an official transgender, it's on the record. Every 2 weeks, I'm a different gender. I'm male 1 week, female the next. All the employees know it.
Let me ask you a question. Let me ask you a question, though, about that, Drew. When you fill out the form, does it ask you to fill in a blank or check a box when it comes to the gender question?
Okay, they do have an online kind of thing that you fill out. Gender's not in that. It's in the question. It's not in the questionnaire. It's in the interview, because there's always an interview after the questionnaire. And what's ironic is at the end of that, they ask you, "Have you understood all the questions?"
Have you what? Wait, have you
Have you understood all the questions?
Oh yeah, okay.
And people don't understand what they're answering,
right?
Because they don't explain it,
right?
And what's really kind of funny about it is they only allow male and female. So if you're, I tried it. I went non-binary, and they wouldn't let me donate.
No kidding. Why?
Right. So because
I don't understand.
Because they have to have a biological answer. That's the thing. They pretend it's a biological answer. And the requirements for giving blood change depending on whether you're a woman or a man. And the amount of blood you can give changes depending on whether you're a woman or a man.
Oh, that's interesting. Well, see, there's a way around this. There is a very simple way around this, this confusion. But it sounds a bit coarse, but it's a solution, all right? And the problem is that we use language that has been compromised, like man or woman, okay?
No, you have to say, are you a Y chromosome person?
Yeah, well, that would be one way to do it. But what I had in mind is just vagina or penis.
Oh, gosh.
Okay. I know that sounds a little crass, but I'm just being straightforward. I mean, at least those are the medical. Those are the medically acceptable terms. So if you have a bathroom that identifies, if you have this physical body part, this is the bathroom you use. If you have this physical body part, then this is the contrary one, or I should say complementary one, then this is. And so then there's never any debate because we're not asking you anything about what you believe or anything about one's identity or any of those controversial issues. And that's a way to get around this same issue, it seems to me, in giving blood.
Well, it won't quite do it because of sex change operations, but yes, I think.
Well, okay, but those are extremely rare.
What they should do is test the blood to see if it has Y chromosomes in it.
But that would be another way of doing it, right? But even in a sex change operation, you don't lose, you don't get the parts that are important to solve the problem. You don't get a vagina, you know, if you don't have one. Let's just say there will be this much smaller portion of ambiguity. I think that's the way around it. You just talk about physical structures. But, I hope you still give blood and just answer the question accurately so you can do the good thing that you've been doing, which is helping people get blood when they need it, okay?
Well, I've been answering male and female each way, and they know that it's in protest. The question.
Yeah. Well, but I have a suggestion about how you can protest, and that's why I was asking exactly how the question is put to you. So if, for example, and I wrote this in the piece that just came out today, so you can check it online. It's right on our homepage, str.org, but the best way is to have it sent to you, you know. And that is when, since so many companies are now asking you to put your preferred pronoun is the language they use at the end of your communiques for the company. What I'm suggesting people do is to simply say, I don't have a preferred pronoun. I have a sex. I'm male, for example. And just leave it at that. Now, keep in mind that what is being asked of them is two things. One is to self-identify, okay? But the second thing is to participate in a narrative. So if I answered my preferred pronoun is male, I would be self-identifying as male because I am a male. That's my sex. But I would also be participating in the narrative by saying that maleness is not just what my physical body is, but it is my self-identification, and that's relativizing the whole issue of sex. And that's why I don't think people who are male should just say male if they can do something else, because the question is, how do you self-identify? You know, what is your preferred pronoun? I don't want to play that game. And I discourage Christians from playing that if they can sidestep it. And that's why I say, if you just simply say, I don't have one. Okay, that's the way you self-identify from their perspective. How can they complain about that? I don't have one of those things. I have a sex. Here it is. What's going to be their complaint? Now you've identified your sex objectively, and you have not participated in affirming the narrative that they're trying to get you to affirm. And I don't guarantee people aren't going to get pushback on that, because it's clear the person who answers that way is pushing back on the narrative, and that's what's important to these people. They don't care what your gender is or your sex. They care about the narrative, and they're trying to enforce this narrative, and that's why I think we should just say no. We're not going to do that, okay, because we don't believe in that stuff, so we're not going to participate. And now, I don't know if on the form or in the interview you have a means of doing that. When you say, I don't have a preferred gender, I have a sex, and here it is.
Yeah, they say, please confirm your gender, is the wording they use.
Oh, okay, so if you ask the question, this is your initial comment, what the heck is that? What the heck is that? Because it sounds like they're asking you to confirm something about reality. But gender is not a reality question. It's a psychological question. It's not a question about reality. It's a question about psychology. So what is gender? Gender is whatever you think you are. In what category? Because they can't say he and she, because that's binary. And they don't want to do that in the narrative. They don't want to limit it to you. So you think you are what? I'm a father. I'm a resident of Thousand Oaks. To press the issue that they're asking this ridiculous, inane, ambiguous question that is tied to a silly narrative. You know, so I don't know how you could navigate that, but you sound like you got the gumption to push back, obviously. And if you do it a nice way, it might be a fair way of challenging the nonsense. You know, too many people are just going along with this, and they're like lemmings.
Right. Yeah. We need to step up. Right. And this was one case where it's easy because they want my blood.
Yes.
So they'll take it, even if I bounce back and forth between, and I've had people at the data down at headquarters question if what's going on, which is great.
Well, what you could say, and pardon me, and I'm not doing this for shock effect, but what you could simply say is, the answer to your question is, I have a penis. You write down whatever you want on the form. And just leave it at that. You know, I mean,
I'm trying to hit further down the line, though. I'm trying to hit headquarters because the interviewer and those people, they really are just following the script.
Right, I know, but this presumes that you have some capability of doing that. And it might be that all you can do is say, I'm not going to participate in your narrative. Now, I mentioned this, I was going to talk about it in my commentary, but I got distracted about my fishing adventures. But maybe I'll say more about it later. But at the end of this piece that I'm referring to that just came out today about pronouns matter, I say, look, you may not be able to change other people, but you may not be able to change the world on this, but we can keep the world from changing us. And that's kind of my perspective on this, Drew. You want to reach down the line and make a difference in the organization or whoever's doing this, the American Red Cross, whatever. I honestly do not think that you're going to have an impact to do that, because you're a small player in their mind. They are pushing against an entire massive cultural movement, and they're not going to do that.
If other people joined me, maybe we'd have a chance.
Well, I'm not going to discourage you, but I'm not optimistic. I think that you have a victory if you simply refuse to play with the narrative, play along, that's your approach. You're not going along with the narrative. You want to push back even more aggressively, and fine. I'm not convinced it's going to make any difference in the minds of these people, because they are driven and by the way, you're going to have to get a following, and that's a lot of work. To get what? The American Red Cross to change the question it asks? That's not a very it's not worth the effort. Let's put it that way.
Well, the problem is, if we can't win in medicine, I mean, if they don't, this is medicine. This is where reality matters. If we can't win in medicine, then where can we win?
Well, the win is, in my view, this is a meaningful goal that is accomplishable, and that is, I am not going to play your game. I'm not playing along. here's my answer, and it's not what you're looking for, but it's reality. Okay, that's what I'm. That's the point I'm making. We said we may not be able to change the world, but we can keep the world from changing us. We are not going to live by that lie. That's my emphasis in this, Drew. So, you knock yourself out. Do what you want. You know, if you get a movement going, fine. And yeah, it's medicine. That doesn't matter to these people. Medicine doesn't matter. Math doesn't matter.
It blows me away.
In Portland, there is no right answers to math, right? That's racist to say that there's only one right answer to a math question. That's racist. I mean, this is what we're faced with, the lunacy of our age. Absolute lunacy. So pushing back is important, and I think we ought to in appropriate ways. But the most important thing for me is right now is not that we end up changing the rest of the system, but that we refuse to allow the system to change us. That's my goal line stand at the moment, and it's doable. It's doable. Now, the more people you have that are refusing to live according to a lie, and by the way, that is happening. There are lots of people now that are standing up and simply saying no to a whole host of nonsensical things that are being crammed down our throats, okay? And that's good. And when more people say no, that itself is going to rock the system. Okay, Drew?
Yes, thank you.
Hey, yeah, keep giving blood. And keep saying, you know, speaking the truth. Don't live by lies. And good for you.
All right. Great. Thank you, Greg.
Okay, Drew. Good talking to you, buddy. Oh, by the way, Oregon, that's close to, I don't know where you live in Oregon, but, you know, that's probably striking distance from Seattle. And we got an event coming up in Seattle on October 15th and 16th is our reality event. Just saying.
Yeah, I'm in Southern Oregon.
Oh, okay. Well, that's a long haul. All right. Well, you can come to the Southern California one then. All right. All right, buddy. Good talking to you.
All right. Thanks.
Okay. Thanks. Let's go to break and come back with more calls here on Stand to Reason. Friends, if you like this broadcast, I know you'll love hashtag STRask. It's our shorter 20-minute podcast where I am paired with the wonderful Amy Hall, and together we answer the questions you send us on Twitter. Hashtag STRask is released twice a week, Mondays and Thursdays, and it's only about 20 minutes long, so it's perfect to listen to on your morning jog or while driving around running errands or cleaning your garage or just plain loafing at home. Amy and I tackle your questions on theology and ethics and culture and lots more, offering our insight on the questions you're asking or the challenges you face. You can listen on Apple Podcasts or wherever you download your own shows. Just remember, send us your questions on Twitter using the name of the podcast, hashtag STRask. That's hashtag STRask.
Have you ever wondered how Stand to Reason is able to produce fresh, accessible content each week? We rely on generous donors so that we can provide you with the tools and tactics you need to be an effective ambassador for Christ. If you've benefited from this podcast or any of our donor-provided resources, including our apps, blog posts, articles, and short videos, consider making a financial contribution to Stand to Reason today. Just visit str.org/donate to show your financial support. It has been an honor providing you with a host of free resources for more than 27 years to help you give voice to the Christian worldview. Help us continue by making a financial gift today at str.org/donate.
Greg Kokel here, giving you a piece of my mind, as I do every Tuesday evening when I'm in town, which is most of the time. And I want you to give me a piece of yours. That's the way this program has always worked from the beginning. In fact, this show is now in its 31st year, if my math is right. As I started out with the Crawford Network, and then we bought the show back from them, so to speak. They paid me, and then we paid them. Now we got our own studio, and that's great, but it's been a long haul, and it's been very satisfying, and I'm glad to have all of you on board. Incidentally, reminds me that there is another thing I'd like you to be on board with, and that's Stand to Reason University, STRU, and we have opened up, I think, four or five courses. We got a new one. It's going to be launching soon. I'll tell you about that in a few weeks. But we have the tactics course already. We have the story of reality. We have the ambassador course. We have homosexuality in the Bible, which Alan Schliemann has taught. We have truth is not ice cream. Faith is not with. Oh, truth is not ice cream. Not the faith is not wishing. That's a different thing. But we have truth is not ice cream. It's a talk on relativism. Tim Barnett does it in the way that only Tim can do. Let's put it that way. And they're not overwhelming in terms of their material, their demand. We try to throw the ball so everyone can catch it. We want you to go through these things and graduate one, and then take another one. And we are continuing to put new courses online so that you have a self-guided experience of quality stuff to be an effective ambassador, to give you the courage that you need to be able to stand against the onslaught that this culture is delivering out. So you can go to STRU. Let's see. Actually, the best thing to do is go to training.str.org, or you can just go to str.org. And then in the upper right-hand corner-ish, you'll see the icon for STRU, and tap that, and that will send you to the location you can sign up. Doesn't cost anything. You just got to get past registration to get all the wonderful stuff. So I hope you do that. Let's go to Maryland and Timothy. Welcome to Stand to Reason, Tim.
Hey, Greg. How you doing?
Doing good. Thanks.
I've been listening to your show for about 12, 13 years now. I just want to let you know, this is the first time I'm calling in, but you've made a huge impact in my life. Just listening and taking in wisdom and critical thinking Christianity over the years. So I just want to thank you for that.
Well, you're really welcome, Tim. Or is it you prefer Timothy rather than Tim, or does it matter?
Tim's fine.
Okay. Tim, you're really welcome. And I realize one of the things I think is a valuable thing about radio that you don't get in kind of lectures is that some things are taught and other things are caught. And I think radio, because there's ongoing conversations, gives opportunity for teaching, of course, but then there's also that other factor, that other element that because it's conversational, it's interactive and all that, that's you can kind of, things just rub off on people in a way that they wouldn't in a regular teaching circumstance. So that's why I'm glad you've had a long history with us listening to the show, and I sure appreciate that.
Well, I appreciate you, Greg.
Thank you, Tim.
My question is, over this past year, 2020 has just been very politically heated.
Mm-hmm.
And I've noticed, just as a believer, when I bring up things that other Christians differ in opinion on, let's say how we're voting or the topic of vaccines, mm-hmm. it almost seems like immediately it goes to, well, that's a matter of conscience. Mm-hmm. That's a matter of conscience. And my wife and I, we have a lot of these conversations a lot, worldview-oriented conversations, and we see the implications of what these choices make.
Uh-huh.
So depending on who you vote for or...
Right.
You know, even small things. So we see where these decisions are leading.
Right.
But I know for the sake of the unity in our church, you know, I hear a lot, well, you know, we want Christians to be able to be unified by the gospel and not divisive over these issues just between you and God. So, you know, and so a couple of times I've heard it compared to the meat offered to idols. Well, I went back to scripture, because I was thinking, if this is the justification we use for all these issues, then my goodness, there's we're justifying everything as a matter of conscience,
mm-hmm.
and some of these Christians are going in polar opposite directions.
Yeah, you know, the irony about that response is that, given Paul's instruction, it is not a matter of conscience. He says that an idol is nothing, and there is nothing wrong with eating meat offered to idols. Now, he realizes there are some people who are mistaken in their view, and then he recommends a also not a matter of conscience, and an objective moral guideline that has to do with sensitivity to those people. But it's not, this isn't, meat offered to idols is not a gray area. You know, even biblically, Paul is quite clear on that. That's why it's an ironic thing that people would offer that as an analog to what we're facing right now.
And that was my thought, too, because when I flip back over to Acts, and when Jesus lowered down the sheet with the animals in it, he told Peter to take and eat.
Right.
And Peter's response was, it's unclean. And then Jesus gave an objective response saying,
right,
don't say what I've made clean, unclean. So that made me think, well, clearly the objective right in the situation is that you can eat unclean meat,
mm-hmm,
but that we're to show grace toward those who are weak in their faith.
Right, right.
But then the next thought was, do we leave them and say, well, it's a matter of conscience, I'm going to show grace, and we're just going to move forward? Or is there a point at which the believer who has a misinformed conscience should correct the conscience?
Yes, I think the answer to that is correct, is yes. Notice that what Paul does is he identifies the one who's mistaken as the weaker brother. A weaker brother is someone who is not well informed, and therefore their conscience is offended at things they should not be offended at if they were properly informed. Now, the important thing in that particular case, I think this has got other dimensions about it I want to talk about here before we sign off in about 6 minutes, but the important thing there is that there is an objective requirement there that if people's conscience is misinformed, they still need to take that into consideration. Paul doesn't want people to sin against their consciences. Okay, and that's important. You know, if for you something is sin and you do it, then that's sinful. You know, he doesn't want you to do that. Okay, however, in this situation, it troubles me when somebody says, well, that's not gospel, and therefore we should not be taking positions on it. Well, was slavery gospel? Is racism gospel? Is abortion gospel? And you can think of all kinds of injustices that it seems to me biblically we ought to be concerned with, but that are not gospel. When somebody says that, it seems to me it truncates the role of the Christian in the world, okay? And I think slavery is a good example because we fought that battle, you know, a century and a half ago, and most people now think it was the right thing to do, even though it wasn't a gospel issue, okay? So what it comes down to here, and I'm kind of moving quickly here, looking at the clock, Tim, and that is that there are lots of issues that are on the table right now that are so-called political issues that have significant moral consequence. And as I've said before, if our attitude is, well, let's not get into anything political, all the other side has to do is to make it political and we have to shut up. And I have made this point at least 20 years ago, the one I'm making right now, that when very little was politicized, but more and more things were getting politicized, I said, look, we are forced out of the public discussion about moral issues that really matter. We are forced out of relevancy as a group of people if we are told we can't get political because all they have to do is make it political. And by the way, now everything is political. Everything is political. There's nothing that's not political. Even the gospel is political, for goodness sake. And so that means we can't speak about anything. So my view is that we have an obligation to speak to those things that have moral significance. Now, we have to sometimes reason through those things and show why it isn't just abortion's not a matter of conscience any more than slavery was just a matter of conscience. Some people do, some people don't, whatever. No, there are right moral answers to some of these things, and it may take a little bit more concerted, thoughtful effort to figure out what it is, okay? But most of these issues are not hard. I wrote a piece a year and a half ago. It's called Faithfulness is Not theologically complicated or something to that effect. And I looked at all these issues, Jesus being the only way, homosexuality, abortion, number of others. Well, this is not hard biblically. People have made them hard because of social pressure, not because God wasn't clear. Okay, so I think there are some things that it's worth, you know, a hill worth dying on theologically, so to speak. And it's our obligation to educate people on these things. And so when somebody says, well, you know, that's not a gospel issue, what does that mean? Or that's a matter of conscience. What does that mean? Are you saying that there's no right or wrong answer to this moral question? Why would you say that? Well, people have differences of opinion. Well, yes, that's true, but that doesn't mean that there's no right or wrong answer. And so I think when it comes to these particular things, Tim, when you look at them, you and your wife, you look at these particular things and you say, look, I think that there's a right answer to this biblically, and we can reason that way. And if somebody is saying, well, we're not going to cause any, we don't want any disunity, oh, well, they just created it. They said, okay, you have to be quiet on a moral issue that's important because we, you know, we don't want to disagree. And this is when you have to make a decision yourself. Is it worth the fuss, the moral weight of it, or should you just let it go? And some things you do let go. You just say, okay, I'm not going to fuss about that with these people under these circumstances. But other times the issues are really important. And do they sometimes divide on sectarian lines like political parties? Yes, of course. The Republican Party was the party against slavery back in the 1860s. I mean, so if you are against slavery, you know, you went with that party. All right. I'm not trying to, I'm just using that as an example and not championing one party over another. I'm just as an obvious example. So there are times when supporting a political party's position is important, not because of the party, but because of the position. And it isn't always going to be the same party anyway. We try to do what's right, especially when it's morally weighty, and we try to educate people as to why those things are right. Okay. Sorry it was so quick there at the end, Timothy. But I think you got the gist of it. Thank you for your call. That's it for this hour, friends. Greg Kokel for Stand to Reason. Give them heaven, friends. Bye-bye.